Papa and I are going to record, so y'all go ahead and shut the door.
I'm going to go sit on the front porch and read a book. Oh, but we won't have fun without you.
You're listening to No Greater Joy's Vintage Answers from the Mailbag, dug from the depths of our archives. This week, Mike and Debbie answer a question that many of us have struggled with at one time or another.
Okay, this letter is about the book's fault, too. Dear brother and sister Pearl, I'm writing first of all to say how thankful I am for your books and also for your newsletter. I've been praying for God's guidance in getting my children, ages 6, 4, and 8 months, under control, and I was so pleased when I read your book. It has changed my life, not to mention the lives of my children. I'm struggling to put the principles in your book into practice, but those I have been using have been successful. I do have a question. In the June-July 1998 newsletter, there's an article entitled, "It's the Book's Fault." You talked about diet and sleep patterns of many mothers causing chronic fatigue. I know this is a real problem for me. I'd like to know your thoughts on how to successfully battle this. I suppose you get many, many letters requesting information like this, so I will understand if you can't reply personally, but I would greatly benefit from any information you have to offer. This goes right back to the woman I just talked to. A lot of times chronic fatigue is just a buildup of the glands in the neck where you're not using them, and it's the only part of the body system that doesn't have its own flushing system. The heart beats and flushes the blood. The oxygen is forced in and forced out, but the gland system needs action. And when you don't have action, you get a sluggish, sickly feeling, oftentimes run a temperature and just feel bad. And mothers get in the habit where they're eating junky food and they're sleeping a lot and they're laying around and they just get more and more sluggish where they just don't feel like doing anything. They drag themselves from the couch to the kitchen table to the refrigerator to the kitchen table to the couch, and everything gets, the house gets messy, and they just feel like they've developed a disease. And the disease they've developed is not chronic fatigue. It's just being, the body's being full of poisons from the lack of doing anything. You get that same woman up and start working and moving, and those glands start, the muscle starts squeezing on those glands, the poisons start flowing through, change her diet, get off so much sugar, and that woman will feel fine. So that chronic fatigue is brought on. A lot of women bring it on. So many women have it. I would say probably 85% of the women that stay at home have the same complaint. We get so many letters, you wouldn't believe it. And that many women couldn't be sick. It's got to be from developing a pattern of not getting up and getting working. In our community, of course, the women have to get up because they have a whole lot of children. They've got to move on a regular basis because they've got to build a fire to cook a meal and haul the water and wash the clothes by hand and go out into the garden and get the food. And in our day in society, we've developed a society where a woman has to flip a switch to turn the light on and then stick something in the microwave to get breakfast ready and then put the dishes on the table and put the children there in front and let them eat some cereal and store-bought milk. They don't have to go out to the cow to milk the cow. And then they put the dishes into the dishwasher. And, you know, I mean, in 20 minutes, they have done almost nothing physically. And yet their children are fed and the dishes are put up. And so those glands never get to function. And a woman gets so, she gets to feel like she's a worthless human being, because basically she is a worthless human being. She's not doing anything that's worth anything. I mean, anybody can do what she's doing. And so basically all these young women need to get a new thought about themselves and what they're going to do and how they're going to do it.
I've seen ladies, men too, that really did have sickness or disease, something like polio, or muscular dystrophy, or had some handicap in their organs of their body in some way, and truly had, if you put them into a medical office and tested them, they would truly test sick. But these same people, enthusiastic about life, have some purpose for existence, some reason to get up. I see them work with energy that would equal an athlete's. I see them dragging broken, tired bodies, bodies that should be, if you went by the way they scored on medical tests, they should be laid up in a bed somewhere with people bringing them flowers. But just by looking at their work, looking at the energy, looking at their output, you would think they were in the epitome of health. And I've seen other women who go to a doctor, and the doctor says, we can't find anything wrong. And they go to another doctor, and finally they come up with some exotic term to describe their problems. And quite often you find these same women are on some kind of mood-altering drug, their own Prozac or something else, maybe something to control their emotions. And I guarantee you, if they had some reason for living, some purpose for existence, something that made life exciting and enthusiastic, their heart would get to pumping, they'd get to breathing in good fresh oxygen, their muscles would get tense, they would get active, they would run about the house from one thing to another, they would be reading and learning and applying and visiting other people and ministering, and they would feel like they were in the epitome of health. I would say that the majority of ill health in America is based on attitude. It's based on just a poor attitude about themselves, about their purpose for existence, and why get out of bed? Why get up? Why do something if it doesn't have an eternal value? So if we'll find something to engage ourselves in that is exciting and thrilling and helping other people and ministering and moving, whether it's music or art or visiting people in an old folks' home or creating something or growing herbs or learning about medicine and trying to minister to other people, or learning about diet and helping others, or cooking for someone, or visiting people that are truly shut in and laid up, all those things will stir you up, make your heart beat, and give you energy that you didn't know you had.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite little things. I would love to be able to take thousands of young women and put in them a desire to minister to other people, to fill their life full of passing out tracts. I know of one woman who's known as the little tract lady. She keeps a big bag of tracts and is there at the elementary or high school parking lot in the afternoon to pass out tracts to the small children, tracts that little children can read and understand and have something. Or there for the high school kids with Chick tracts or whatever kind of tract you can get a high school student to read, and you say, what are you going to do with your children? Take your children with you and let them get a chance to see what it's like to minister to people. When I was growing up, my mom, who is not a teacher, would have child evangelism classes almost every week when I was growing up. And because she couldn't teach, she would struggle through it. And by the time I was 13 years old, I had sat through so many classes that she said, you teach. And so I started teaching regularly. When I was 13 years old, my mom would set the classes up. My mom would have the drinks and the cookies and provide the home. She would set up classes in other people's homes. She would come and pick me up at school and take me to the classes. She did everything that she could do, and then she turned me over to be the teacher. And she looked for something to do to minister to other people. Also, I think women should take more charge in keeping the house in good shape. We had a young girl here in missionary training, and she came up. She was the biggest sissy-looking person you would ever see, but she was asking to borrow a tool so she could change the oil on her car. And I was just thrilled that she had the initiative to do it. You know, she didn't look like the type that could, but I know how to change the oil and the spark plugs, and I've done it before, and I could do it again. Not because I would have to, but because it's a good thing to know, and it's a good thing to find out how to do all these things, to be a part of life and not just sit around waiting for somebody to give you something to do, but get up and look for something to do and get your children involved doing it.
Well, by the way, Deb, you talked about the women here getting up and hauling water and building a fire. We might all let them know that we don't haul water, that it runs into the house through a spigot. And we do build a fire to stay warm in the winter, but we cook on a gas stove. And so there are lots of reasons to be enthusiastic. You don't have to go back and be a pioneer in order to have something to do. But as Deb said, modern life, modern conveniences have created boredom and depression that didn't exist in former eras. When life is a struggle to survive, then there's enthusiasm, because if you're going to get cold or go hungry unless you apply yourself, then you're going to have a reason to be doing something. Your heart will be beating, and life will be exciting. Even if there's some fear and anxiety, it's exciting. And there's not that depression that requires drugs. Inactivity in America is killing the home.
Well, that wraps up this week's archives. We hope you found it as encouraging as we did. Don't forget to check out the specials at Cane Creek Corner.